Welcome to the Pod Cultcast, where we talk about life, love, learning, and libido, and share our journey through polyamory and kink. I'm Chasten, and our other hosts are Max, Hannah, and Eric. And this week, we're bringing you an episode of our Cultcast Media Club, which is our Patreon-exclusive podcast series, and we hope that it will excite, delight, and entice you to become a subscriber on Patreon. You can visit our website, podpodcultcast.com, that's cult with a V, /supportthepod, and learn all about our Patreon, access the entire Patreon website. Our subscribers get special access to updates about our lives, they get cool swag, and they, of course, get this exclusive podcast series where we read books and we watch shows and listen to music and watch movies that have some element of polyamory or kink. And even if they don't specifically focus on those, we still try to link them back to our interests in our podcast. And we have a great time. You can also find out everything that we did at Disney and Universal, hear what's going on in our lives, and sometimes we do special polls. Really, it's something not to be missed. So please, if you love the podcast, if you love us, if you enjoy what we're doing here, consider supporting us. Again, that's podpodcultcast.com/supportthepod. We would really appreciate it. There are different levels, and for each level, you get different kinds of swag, and all of you get access for as little as $1 a month to our exclusive podcast series. So go and subscribe to our Patreon right now. Now, coming up is an episode where we express our opinions about love and relationships, sex and kink, polyamory and LGBTQ issues, and whatever else comes up. And while we talk about these things, we may also touch on stuff like violence and abuse and mental health challenges, and these can be difficult topics, so keep that in mind moving ahead. We want to give our listeners a special big warm hug. We know that there's a lot going on right now with COVID-19 / the coronavirus. We have an infographic on our website, podpodcultcast.com, that talks about the difference between isolation versus self-quarantine. It is absolutely okay for you to still continue on with your normal lives. If your jobs have told you to work from home, they're trying to keep large groups from gathering, but you can still get pizza delivered. You can still go to the store. Our infographic outlines everything you need to know about who is at risk and who is not at risk, and gives you some links to the LA Times article we used to source the infographic, as well as the CDC information we use for statistics. So please check that out. You're going to be okay. We know it's scary. We know that everything is chaos right now, and people tend to panic when this happens. But just remember that in times like this, the best thing that we have is each other, so we can all pull together and feel loved. And speaking of pulling together and all of that love, special shout out to our Patreon supporters, friends, and family who helped me specifically get to PodFest 2020. The PodFest Media Expo was a great learning experience for me to help make our podcast better for you, the listener, and a better experience for us as we produce this podcast. Keep listening, keep helping us grow. Check out our Patreon and enjoy this episode of the Cultcast Media Club. I'm going to shut up now. We hope you have fun. Well, let's not talk about that because we're recording. Them. No, let's not butt-fuck. We're not butt-fucking anybody.
Sometimes.
When's the last time you got butt-fucked?
Well, now we're getting into this other movie.
I don't think anybody got butt-fucked in that movie.
Nobody got butt-fucked in that movie.
No. Well, no. Not really.
No. But do we know? There were lots of fever dream sex scenes.
Do we
scenes.
Know where we're going to?
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff that
we're going to San Francisco.
It was that okay. Let's intro the
show. So welcome to Cultcast Media Club number 4, our Patreon exclusive series for our supporters on Patreon. We really appreciate your support and we thank you for believing in us. So we like to talk about books and movies and music that has to do with queer stuff, polyam stuff, kink stuff, all that stuff. And this particular movie that we're about to talk about has a lot of that in it. We're going to talk about The Duke of Burgundy. It was directed by Peter Strickland and came out in 2014. You can watch it on Hulu with a subscription, or, you know, you could just steal it on the internet. Figure it out for yourselves. So we watched The Duke of Burgundy. First impressions, anybody?
There was no Duke and there was damn little Burgundy.
So The Duke of Burgundy is a type of butterfly.
Oh, shit.
It's so pretty.
It's a very pretty
movie.
It's visually very pretty.
Okay, if I were to sum it up in a real short way, it's as if somebody took all lesbian porn from the internet, cut out all of the sex from it, stitched together all of the half-assed thrown together plots, and then made it visually gorgeous.
Well, if we're talking about like the movie structure-wise and what have you, like there's a lot of weird surrealistic cinema elements to it. Like there's like crazy screeching sounds and cricket sounds and stuff that's just there to make you uncomfortable.
Yes. So
and then an hour and a half or an hour and 15 minutes in, it straight up becomes a fucking Brunel movie.
Yeah. So the director, this Peter Strickland guy, has done a bunch of stuff, and most of his stuff falls in this sort of tribute genre to the movies of the 60s. This specifically was a tribute to a director named Jess Franco, who was a Spanish filmmaker who did a lot of stylized lesbian and, well, other kind of exploitation films. So this was all exploitation film and all psychedelic, you know, it was very psychedelia, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, it did look like a psychedelic film, yeah.
And I was just excited because I guess it's Sidzi Babette Knudsen. I don't know how to pronounce her name. But she was in Westworld, but she was also in one of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo movies, I believe. So
one
I just like her
European
a lot. Yeah.
Ones?
Yeah, she's a Danish actress. Yeah. I think she was in the American one.
So there was no...
I could be wrong about that.
I don't think I missed it. There was no card for the actual year, right? Like,
so
what
the
this
director
was set in?
The director says it's like a 1980s kind of time period.
No,
like set in 1980.
No,
it looked like it was set in a manual typewriter.
Like they had.
I don't
old
think she was actually
speakers.
Typing anything.
She wasn't actually typing anything.
No, she wasn't. It was.
It was all part of the game. So the premise of this movie is we see a relationship between two women, The director says that it didn't really matter that there was two women. It could have easily been two men, that the whole point of the movie was not that they were queer or homosexual, that the point of the movie was the relationship between the two people. So it opens and we have two characters. We have Cynthia, played by Knudsen, and then Cara Dana plays Evelyn, who is her apparent submissive in the beginning of the film. And it opens with this beautiful bicycle scene, and she's, you know, riding her bicycle, and she gets to this house and she knocks on the door, and Cynthia opens a door and says, "You're late." And then it becomes this whole sort of mistress-maid fantasy that goes on. And it's all about this, you know, like, oh, you're making mistakes. Oh, you're not doing it well enough. You're not fulfilling what I've told you to do, from the mistressy type. But then it flip-flops at some point. I don't know. I find
it doesn't so much flip-flop as show that
The truth of it.
Right. Show that she's bottom topping.
Yeah. Topping from the bottom. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's still a dynamic of a master slave relationship, sort of. Only it shows that the slave is bottom topping.
Right.
Which I don't think is uncommon.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
Well, there's a point, it's early on in the movie, and the Evelyn, who's the submissive quote unquote in this movie, she has lots of whispering voiceovers where she talks about, like, this is all I've ever wanted and yada, yada, yada. And one thing she says, like, to be owned, to be used, as long as I'm yours, I'm happy. But it's a sort of like, you have to make me mine, this prison of this relationship. It's very strange.
Well, it shows that they're both in a prison of their own making.
Yeah.
Both of them are.
Yeah.
What isn't clear to me is what is outside of the created dynamic, what is the actual dynamic of the relationship? I think you were given to assume that Cynthia, who is older, is the one of means and the one of education and the one who has the power in the relationship for those reasons.
But then at one point they mention...
Yeah. I wasn't sure that was actually the case because she kept saying, well, all of these clothes
that you buy
for me.
Right. So Evelyn, the submissive...
Not like I picked out for you, but I bought for you. Yeah, I thought the same thing, yeah.
And it seems like Cynthia is an authority figure in this field of I have to look at the word.
Butterflies.
Lepidopterology?
Butterflies.
Moths.
Butterflies. Butterflies
moths.
And moths.
Oh, yeah. And most of those were moths, actually.
Yeah. So moths. So they study moths, and they have this little women's club where they meet and they talk about moth shit, including moth sounds. It was very strange.
But, you know, and I, like, the second the moth came on the screen, I was like, oh, there's going to be a very clear narrative of the younger woman, like,
metamorphosizing
into something else. And there wasn't. Like, that wasn't the, like...
I think it was just, in that sense, the reveal that she was actually the one that was controlling.
So I think... I think the movie is tragically sad.
I thought it was tragically boring.
Oh.
It was kind of boring. But it was beautiful. And yes, it was also very, very sad.
It was very, very sad because it's a spoiler, then this is a point where we should say, like, we're gonna just spoil this movie all over the place. Spoilers, like, this topping from the bottom. They get away from it at one point. At one point the submissive says, like, we don't have to do this, it's fine, I love you. But at the very end of the movie we see them going through the motions again.
Right.
And the mistress, quote unquote, Cynthia, is very dead behind the eyes, and I don't know, it's heartbreaking because she wants to be with this person, and the only way she can be with this person is to betray who she is as a person.
Well, didn't they kind of step away from that and become uncomfortable and then come running back to each other, in a sense, because they needed that kind of, oh, we both suck at this dynamic, but it's what we got?
I don't know.
I kind of got a bit of that out of it. Because that's what happened, like, with the, when she cleaned the other chick's boots.
Right.
And then...
There's a point in the movie where the submissive cleans the boots of someone else who's involved in the Butterfly Society.
The architect. Or the carpenter. Or something like that.
Yeah, it was the carpenter.
It was the woman who builds the kinky beds.
Oh, I thought it was the woman at the...
no, wait, it was the... Because...
Same woman, blonde wig.
She was looking in the... Looking
was
at,
it?
Yeah.
Same woman, blonde wig.
Oh. Same woman with blonde wig.
Didn't catch that.
Interesting. Okay.
I thought so. I don't know. I'd have to go look at the... Anyway, no, Hannah.
Go on.
That wasn't immediately obvious to me, but that does make sense.
Yeah.
That they would be the same person. There was a woman that caught both of the couples, like, each individual in the couple's attention at the lectures.
Yes.
Who also has, apparently, another role and gets involved, and it's like it's a cheating situation, which I thought was really interesting. I think it's fascinating the way that it all unfolds in the first 30 or 45 minutes and the way everything layers in, because you get to see first sort of the routine. It looks like the routine of their day.
Right.
And then as you go on, you realize that this is just the routine of a specific, like, scripted game that they have together. And as you go through, it causes you to question sort of each iteration that came before as to how much was agreed upon in advance and how much was improvised and how much was consensual.
Right.
And then there's sort of a crisis point in the middle where you kind of lose touch with reality altogether.
Yes.
Like, it's much less productive from that point on trying to pick apart, like, who was controlling whom, and then you kind of plunge into the extra bit. We got to 20 or 30 minutes from the end. Like, what is there left to do?
Yeah.
I've seen this movie several times,
and I really couldn't remember, like, what else is going to happen now.
But they kind of reset back into the routine. It's like there's nothing else for them to touch.
Yeah, the submissive clean the other chick's boots, and then... The Cynthia started talking shit more and wearing her PJs.
So I really liked that because
it
was
right on back to their old dynamic.
That the scene, like, I really liked that. The scene, I have actually done a, like, making somebody make their own birthday cake scene. It did not work out well, just like that one didn't work out. I should
have
known.
You have to know how to bake. You can't just tell somebody to do that.
That's not the point. They knew how to bake. That wasn't the point. The point was, is that, you know, you see Evelyn crying, like, it's her birthday, and her mistress has made her make her own cake and is now eating the cake while putting her foot on her throat. And she's just sobbing. She's just laying on the floor crying because it's not what she wants. It's not the fantasy that she has. But meanwhile, you know, at that point, Cynthia, the mistress, seems pretty content, or seems like she's getting revenge, or seems like she's finding some fulfillment from what's happening right then when she has the power. Mm-hmm. But then
and
she gives up that
saying,
power again.
Oh, I don't, you know, this isn't for me. I don't want this. This isn't who I am. I just do it for you. But in that moment, she seems to really take pleasure in holding it over.
And she wanted to do it in her own way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so
without
she pointedly.
All the trappings of
right.
The, yeah. Yeah. Well, and so that follows, rather, what Evelyn wanted her birthday gift to be was, which was a fancy piece of sex furniture.
So yeah, she wanted a bed with a cage underneath it, essentially.
Right. So they have the salesman of sexy kink furniture
just come on by,
come to the house, who mentions by address her previous client.
Which I
you can't
very, very
do
weird.
That. That yeah. is unprofessional, lady. Yeah.
Well, I feel like. This was a world that was created and not supposed to be based in reality.
Right. It was definitely not based in reality.
So I feel like this is a world.
People who study Mars don't live in chateaus.
Well, I feel like this
I think those are the only people who study Mars are the people who have that sort of disposable time.
I feel like that this was supposed to be a very non-judgmental look at relationships and incompatibility in relationships. And because there was no point in the movie where the fetish stuff and the kink stuff was treated as funny or nasty or anything mm-hmm. like that. It was just very matter of fact, and it was still all done very beautifully.
Yeah, and it wasn't even really treated as titillating.
No.
Right.
It wasn't. No. It was just the daily grind.
Right.
Yeah.
I get the same emotions watching this as I do when I watch Match Point. Which
what
is a completely separate thing.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Isn't that when there's like a tie in volleyball? It's right at the end of the...
Yes. So there's a tennis movie.
or tennis, yes.
I'm going to look it up. I wasn't
I was making a joke.
That,
that's
but...
actually close to the mark?
Yes.
Okay, because I don't know what you're talking about.
All right.
I haven't
tangent,
seen that either.
Just for a moment. Okay, so...
Vamping. You're live.
The Duke of Burgundy gives me the same emotions as when I watch Match Point, which is a Woody Allen film from 2005 about a really messed up set of relationships that go wrong, and you know that they're going to, and you kind of have to watch it unfold. But it's that like very intense passion that draws you in with just like misery throughout. And that's how I feel about this one. I'm like, this is so beautiful, and I want to engage with this, but it's really painful for the people who are involved in it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you don't really know how to think about it. It gets, conflicting emotions. It's like a very hollow look
that,
at love.
Yeah, hollow is a good way of, so there are like movies that I see, and they do kind of leave you feeling emotionally empty. And that's sort of how this, I think this is a beautiful movie. And I find the kink stuff in it very interesting because it has a lot of the things that I'm interested in. It has a, you know, domestic.
Pissing in people's mouth?
No. No, I'm not into golden showers.
Well, that was like
I mean, if you are, you could watch Karate Kid. That also has a golden shower.
It does have a golden shower. No, the thing that I'm very interested in service submission, like ladies' maid type thing. That's my like that whole like putting your foot on somebody and your furniture or they're dusting around you and you get to tell and you get to drink your tea and read your book while they do it. That's my jam.
Well, I'm not an expert on anything. None of us are. Really experts on anything. We just talk about stuff from our own experience. And in my own experience, like, I thought that was a really honest portrayal of how topping in play can be just fucking exhausting.
Yes.
So people who have 24/7 lifestyle dynamics.
Yes.
Like, every time I hear about that or somebody tells me they're in one of those relationships, all I can think is, God, that must be fucking exhausting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, so, I mean, you're taking responsibility for somebody, but the way that I view it is if somebody's going to be in service to you, their job is to make your life easier. Their job is not for me to have to manage them. So I cannot dominate or be in a DS dynamic with somebody who can't think for themselves. If I have to tell you every step of the process, like, I need you to be able to make mental leaps between, you know, here's the goal and here's where you are now. I can't do all of that for you. That's too much mental work for
me.
And
that's exactly what this was in this movie.
Right.
She had it all handwritten out. And this is the script. This is how this goes. And
right. Well, but the bottom did that.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And was still frustrated. Like, yeah. I don't understand why.
That's because I think she was just a prissy bitch.
Well, no, but maybe.
Well, she's
easy to dislike, yes. I think, in this portrayal.
Yeah.
But also, she's she's pursuing somebody who clearly isn't able or even interested in giving her the experience that she wants. Maybe nobody could have, you know, right. Maybe her expectations were just, you know, way beyond. But I also think that, like you said, there's incompatibility there to say, you know, I love you as an individual, but I have to have this set of other things in my life or I'm not happy.
Right.
Well, it wasn't even clear to me what Cynthia is getting out of that relationship at all. And I think it's...
Back rubs.
And leg rubs and leg caresses.
I think it's presented, again, I think this is a really honest portrayal that a lot of times we find ourselves in relationships where we're not really getting anything out of it,
yeah.
But we so badly want to be in a relationship that we still pursue it because we so badly want to be in a relationship. And I think that's what's portrayed here is that she's not getting anything out of this. She is working her ass off to please a partner because when she is unable to fill that top role and to go by the script that's set out for her to follow, like she breaks down and like asks Evelyn
mm-hmm.
to not be angry at her.
Right.
Yeah.
And she literally broke down. Like she, that's when her back problems started flaring up and all that sort of stuff. Like that was represented in a actual physical manifestation.
Oh, and something I noticed this time that I didn't notice the first time I watched it, whenever she has her back injury, she says, oh, my back does this every few years.
Yeah.
It'll be fine. So they haven't been together very long at all. Right. Not enough for her to know like what her existing health conditions are or, you know, what the routines of her life are. So it's just a really intense relationship that hasn't had much experience under it yet.
I wasn't paying close enough attention at first, I think. Was the green skirt always a signal that she was in the like submissive maid role?
Oh, you know, I don't...
There were a couple of different outfits, but that was one of them. Yes.
I don't think so. I think Cynthia's clothing were the only consistent
things. Now, she wore the green skirt a lot.
Yeah. She did. Yeah.
I thought that was a signal.
Yeah, I didn't pay attention.
She was always wearing
that.
The green skirt in the bedroom, and she was always wearing the other thing when she was in the study.
Okay.
It was kind of more room based.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. So I wrote a list of just like things that I saw that spoke to different interests, not fetishes, but interests that I have. Hosiery and stockings.
There's a bit of that.
Lots of lingerie.
She was wearing two pairs of stockings in that one scene. Am I imagining that? Like she pulled a pair off and then pulled another pair off?
I don't know.
Because I started chuckling about it.
I think they repeated several bits of
that. Yeah, they went through a lot of those.
There were a lot of repeated shots. This wasn't a repeated shot. But there were two pairs taken off.
I didn't pick that up.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
Well... Look, that's the weird shit I noticed.
So the list of things that I found interesting were there's a lingerie fetish, voyeurism, the looking through the peephole, and when they flip it around and you see what the fantasy is actually like for Cynthia, the one who's having to the top in this fantasy, when she's just like pacing the floor and like checking her watch and making sure that she's drinking water so she can pee in her girlfriend's mouth later and all that stuff. Like I really enjoyed that aspect of it because as a top especially because there is just a lot of like, all right, well, they're going to be tied up and blindfolded for another 15 or so I'm just going to do this like kill time, I can take my shoes off for a little bit, that kind of stuff. Their domestic service, of course, golden showers, the idea of punishment, but it was bratty punishment. It was like the like, here, I've scripted this punishment for you to give me because but it wasn't really punishment, so I don't understand how it worked psychologically for her. And the human toilet stuff was really interesting. I mean, golden showers are slightly different than human toilet stuff. And it's because it's less about the fetish for having urine on you and more about the degradation. And I mean, obviously the submissive in this was into degradation, but I don't think Cynthia could do that.
No, and actually, there was the one scene where she literally couldn't do that. Like, she didn't have to pee.
Right, she was unable to pee, and then Evelyn goes, we could turn the faucet on.
Well, yeah.
Did everyone else also keep hearing be nasty?
Sound like the safe word was be nasty. No, it wasn't be nasty. Pinostri.
Pinostri. Yeah. Which refers to the sphinx moth that they kept showing. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Oh. I know. I really thought her. She was telling her to be nasty to her. I thought that was like her begging for her to be nasty to her.
It was very confusing under those frame of mind. I had to go back
and look at like when the moths appear versus how they're using that for a safe word and try to like piece it together. But it doesn't all fit tidily.
Right. You
know, it's a loose motif, I guess.
Something I noticed this go around in watching it, I think if this is the third time I've seen it, the safe word itself became a thing of dread for Cynthia. Mm. Because when Evelyn was locked away in the chest, it was like
get some sleep.
Yeah, Cynthia could rest. She could just be herself. She could be comfortable. There's not a lot of comfort in this movie. And anytime we see Cynthia being comfortable, it's always at the disdain of Evelyn. Evelyn's always very grumpy about the fact that Cynthia is comfortable and not being hot for her at that moment in time. It's just something I noticed.
Yeah, they kind of beat you over the head with it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, in the world of the movie, I was just thinking about it a little bit more. It is not only a world constructed with just one gender; it is just a weird fucking world. There are no automobiles.
No,
it is a world where there is an institute dedicated to moths. Butterflies and moths.
Closes over the winter.
Where people go, weekly or monthly or whatever, to hear a lecture from someone else who just goes there to hear lectures about butterflies and moths and closes over the window.
And it's like House Hunters International. Like, so I study moths and I pee in my submissive's mouth and I'm going to buy this new home in the south of France.
$1 million chateau.
Yeah.
It is just a very, very strange world that is constructed. And I guess the point is just to focus on the relationship, not on a real world where people have to go to work and, you know, clean house other than for...
Well, and it's only set in those two places. It's set in the house and at this meeting hall, but we don't get to see a lot of that.
And they have like, picnics in the prairie or whatever. Like
there's that. So there's outside, and when they're outside, they're just normal people. Mm-hmm. When they're inside, they're constantly battling with trying to get what they need or trying to be what the other person needs. And then when they're at the hall, they're suspicious or wanton.
Presenting an image.
Yes. Yeah.
That I didn't understand at all, what that image was supposed to be.
Right. Evelyn's trying to, like, seem smarter and more important than she is.
Interesting. Evelyn wants to be interesting.
Right.
Evelyn wants Cynthia to want her. But she can only feel wanted by Cynthia if Cynthia is degrading her, and Cynthia can't degrade her.
Right, so why try to show off and talk shit on the other people that are talking about moths? That doesn't fit in that.
Well, that's a very young, sort of ingenue kind of role thing when you feel like you're not getting attention from the elder person in your life that you're either in a relationship with or interested in. You do create these false competitions with other people to try and make yourself look better.
And I think that was also a moment where she was idolizing her partner, because the first lecture that you see, right, is the one that Cynthia gives.
Right. Yeah.
And you see, you know, just the love Dreamy and admiration. Eyes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so next time it's just very disappointing, because who is this, you know, younger, less interesting, less experienced woman? You should be the one up there. And it's almost like she's showing off on behalf of Cynthia, but of course Cynthia is an expert and a mature person who doesn't need that. Right. And so it's just like this disjointed, it's really frustrating. And you can see how they're both frustrated, you know, not with each other, but just with like the mismatch of the situation. And I thought it was interesting. Every time that they are genuinely intimate and enjoying each other, maybe not every time, but there's definitely a pattern. They're pictured in reflections and yes. mirrors and, you know, catching
or like
in the window.
Or like double overlaid frames.
Yeah, on it's very blurry, gauzy.
It's very 60s yeah. looking as well. Isn't it?
Well, I mean,
right. But yeah. every time that they're aligned and they're, you know, sort of reflecting back one another's desires, you get a really visual representation of that.
Mm-hmm.
And as you go, you know, into that crisis point, that's when, you know, the black box literally that she's being put
yes.
in, and they focus in on that emblem
yes.
instead of the reflection. It's just a black hole.
Yes. So yes, there's a mirror, I think, over the bed or by the bed or something.
Like an oval
and then
mirror.
Exactly. And then they have a similar shape on the box. Mm-hmm. And it's also, they do a lot of having both of them look into mirrors alone. And Cynthia does a lot of looking in the mirror at herself yeah. while she's getting ready and things like mm-hmm. that. One thing I thought was strange and I didn't quite understand why it happened was, so after Evelyn cheats and after they go through some stuff, Evelyn just like looks like shit for a while.
Yeah.
And she has like this crazy white lady kind of look to her. Like her hair's all frizzy. She's got extra, extra dark smudged eye makeup. And she looks almost gaunt.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's starving.
Mm-hmm.
And that was I don't understand what exactly was causing that. Was it just portraying misery? Was it portraying
how much of it was
a lack of fulfillment, or was it drama?
Right. How much of that was reality and how much of that was like the fantasy?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Fantasy element, surreal element of the movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, much of the movie was surrealism.
Right.
And then we'd have these little psychedelic montages and blurry lovemaking scenes.
Yeah. Yeah. The push in on Cynthia's crotch that went into the weird Brunel segment was tough and weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But there's no arc to this movie. Nobody grows. Like all the movie does is reveal their sadness.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you're left to assume or left to learn that they have been this all along and they are going to remain in this.
Yeah.
It's interesting, the phrasing, you know, whenever Cynthia breaks down and she says, I'll change myself.
Right.
Right. Because obviously that's not what either of them wants.
They love each other.
Right. So they're going to, you know, as long as they have that to give, they're going to keep trying, but it's not working.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Can we revisit the mannequins?
I think that was just a cost-saving thing.
There were only, so in this hall, there were, 50 people and 3 or 4 mannequins that we picked out? That doesn't really fill out the crowd.
I have no idea what it was supposed to be.
And it's not like they weren't even positioned in ways that would make it.
In natural ways.
They were positioned in.
The hands were up in a way that you would notice that they were.
And the
head's mannequin hands and
right.
stuff. Right. Yeah, I think that was just part of the
unsettling.
Yeah.
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 There's also a mannequin in her dressing room, uncomfortably forward into the camera while she's getting dressed at least once.
Oh, yeah.
I was trying to piece together some kind of pattern there, but it never really emerged.
Yeah, I think it's just the
uncanny
the
valley
bug sounds. It's just the stuff that's there to make you uncomfortable.
Yeah.
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 I mean, that's an uncomfortable setting anyway. Think about sitting in those straight back chairs listening to somebody talk about bugs for...
And playing bug sounds really loud.
Yeah.
So, Eric, at one point you said, finally, when they opened the box and there was a skeleton inside.
Yeah, I did.
What prompted that?
Because in that weird, surreal scene amongst the surreal scenes, it was a reveal of this. They had just shown her going into the box. And Pinastri, Pinastri, Pinastri. And then she opens it and there's a skeleton. I was like, oh, finally, this needy bitch is dead.
Oh.
Oh.
Wow.
I can move on with my life now.
Oh, I thought it was going to be a finally we have pushed through into the horror part of the movie, which also was not really
good. No, it wasn't anywhere close to that.
No,
it's just it seemed that Westworld chick was just getting more and more and more unhappy with the demands of this other chick, and now she was dead. But then she followed her out into the woods and found her in a different box. So,
and then they embraced, and then they were fine for a little while. And then we were back out of the vulva cam.
It would, yes. Yeah, and then it pulled. Oh, okay,
then a bunch of moth wings and roll credits.
Yeah.
It would have been more interesting. I don't know what the resolution would have been, but it would have been more interesting if they had just continued down that path with Cynthia actually exerting her own dominance without being scripted over her.
Right.
But in her, like,
jammies.
Comfy jammies and, like, in her own way. You know, and then the resolution of the story would had to have been Evelyn breaking free in some kind of way, because that also would not be satisfying for her just to be unhappy forever.
Well, but, you know, I think it's interesting because, I mean, Evelyn uses a safe word, and Cynthia covers her mouth with her foot and said something.
You can't just panaster your way out of everything or something
like that. Yeah. Basically, like, you can't safe word your way out of this. And that's a really uncomfortable moment for me because, I mean, we're talking about consent. Like, obviously, she can get up off the floor, but there is such a deep connection between the two. Like, I do feel like that whole birthday cake scene was very damaging to the relationship. It was definitely damaging to the trust that Evelyn was putting in Cynthia to, like, kind of be the manifestation of her fantasies.
Well, what she was more explicitly doing, or at least this is how I interpreted it, is she started doing the things that the other chick was doing. You know, like the other, you polished her boots. And she was saying, oh, but we didn't do anything. Oh, well, we did this. And the did this that they did was that she was talking in a degrading way to Evelyn. And so...
But it was always degrading.
She told her off.
Yeah. It was always degrading.
Yeah, told her off. That was the phrase.
Well, I mean, obviously what's happening here is we have a submissive who's bottoming from the top. Topping from the bottom. And a top, who is service topping, a top who is going like, oh, well, this is what you tell me you want. And so I'm doing it of my own accord in my own way. But that's not what you want. You just want me to do what you want me to do. Yeah.
They express one time, and I'm sorry, Hannah, you were getting racist.
No, go ahead.
They express one time, Evelyn asks to go to the restroom and is told no.
Right.
And we know, we have known, we do know people who have had that as part of their agreement with their, you know, top or master or whatever.
Yes.
And like, man, that's one part of that relationship I can't imagine because I have a real small bladder and it would be a problem.
So, but that's the thing that they agreed to. Like, that's the thing. So, you know, in the total power exchange classes that I've been to, the relationships that I've seen are typically, they have an agreement about what kind of things will be worn, what kind of things will be eaten, and so forth, and when you need to ask permission and when you don't, and when it's expected for you to just function like a human being and of your own accord. And the examples of those relationships I've seen, it's usually there's somebody who's a little more service-oriented, who's on the bottom half of that, or the little letter, or the submissive side, or the slave side, or what have you, and they actually do have some ability to like manage things, but the thing that they're getting out of it is like psychological accountability. That's what they get. Like, I'm better able to do this for myself if I know that I'm doing it for that person. But yeah, there's a whole psychology of that stuff that we could talk about, but not in this episode.
Yeah, I was really torn over the cake scene also, because in some ways it did seem like they were each trying do the thing that would fix it. And in another way, it was just sort of vindicating because, you know, one of them has been kind of cruel to the other and you want to see them get their comeuppance. But, you know, obviously you're watching what is a consent violation. I mean, that shouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
But you know that nobody's in danger. So to me, it looked basically like an ultimatum. Like, you can accept this thing that I need right now to get back at you for what you did to me. Or you can get up and leave and this will be over.
And that's why she looked happy. Because she looked a little happy in that scene.
Cynthia did.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it was just breaking just a little. Not all the way to a real conversation, you know, where they would have had to face what had happened, but facing it sort of within the game.
Well, and it was true. I don't know that this is the right word, but this is the word that comes to mind. It was, at that point, true subjugation. Mm-hmm. Like, or true surrender. Evelyn was finally surrendering to Cynthia, which is something she never did. Mm-hmm. And all the time she was submitting. She never surrendered.
Yeah. You said ultimatum. There's a phrase, trying to remember, that somebody I used to know would use, like break up by proxy or something, mm-hmm. where you won't break up with someone. You just force them into a situation where they have to break up with you.
Right.
So that's
isn't that like a fairly common thing?
Well, yeah. But a specific phrase I'm trying to remember. But yeah, so it looks like she's trying to force her into a position of going like, oh, this isn't actually what I wanted.
Right.
This has to end. Yeah.
Allow me to reassert my dominance over you, right? Because
you
said
I'll show you topping. Or
you can get out. And they stuck together.
Which is wholly unsatisfying.
Absolutely. Both, not a great resolution.
Both for the characters and for everybody
watching
the movie.
There's no resolution. There's no growth.
Yeah. So.
Spoilers.
So there is a Duke of Burgundy. It's a damn butterfly.
Yeah.
There's no resolution or growth.
There's no plot, really.
There's no plot. There's plot. Nudity.
There's a bad guy. There's a denouement.
There's no monster trucks.
There was no ma to denou.
Oh, they knew your mom.
There was no like kick-ass fight scene.
Did they be nasty?
They didn't even be nasty.
Mildly nasty.
You could hear her peeing.
Or was it the tap running?
That's true.
No, I think the first time it was her peeing.
I thought she was sticking her in the shower. That's why I asked you guys what was going on.
No, she was peeing in her mouth.
Yeah, I'm not about that life.
I mean, cool if you are.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff in that movie that I don't really have a problem with, per se.
I'm not yucking anybody's yum. I'm not about that life.
I like that phrase.
Yeah, I don't think it was about any one thing that happened. It was about the ways that they weren't able to really respect each other.
Right.
Yeah, but if there were, you know, like actual conflict or plot and stuff like that, then they would have been too busy to worry about any of it.
All right, quiz time.
Yes, B, 26 and a half, and no.
Hufflepuff.
100%.
Quiz time. Max.
Yep.
Are you a Cynthia or an Evelyn?
I am a Cynthia. I'm a straight up, like, you know, I've service topped and, like, been bossed around from the bottom and, like, have found the whole thing very exhausting and...
and taken off your wig and just said, fuck this.
Yeah. 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 I mean, if that's the question, who we identify more with, definitely that.
Hannah, Cynthia or Evelyn?
I don't think so.
You're neither?
No, Hannah's not.
No, but I don't know. Certainly, like, I can identify with some of the emotions on either side, yeah. I think.
I'm the carpenter. I'm the lady who makes the weird furniture. That's who I want to be.
I'm the carpenter, if we're putting it in these
because
terms.
She asserted a healthy boundary. She said it's going to take 8 weeks to do this.
Hold on.
I
had to actually answer the damn question that you ask, and you're like, I'm neither of those things. Fuck off.
I was going to do that, too. I was going to say, actually, that I was the neighbor that was always raking the leaves because I'm broke, and I have a job.
Max,
and
I thought
don't
you
have
were the
time
Duke
to worry about such silliness.
I ain't no damn butterfly.
Butterflies in the sky.
This is not Reading Rainbow. Don't sully.
Is that what that was?
LeVar Burton.
No.
Take a look. It's in a book.
Okay.
She'll pee in your mouth. Sorry. All right. So, Eric, Evelyn or Cynthia?
I said I was the neighbor.
You're the neighbor?
Yeah, raking the leaves because I got to work.
Okay.
I don't have a lot of money. I don't have time for that.
Yeah,
bullshit.
That was a lush movie. That was just opulence.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Like maybe if I had nothing to do all day,
yeah, that's why I would be an Evelyn. Should also be called first world problems.
Well, no, but I, like I said, I think the point is that you can focus on the relationship and the dynamic because they don't have to go to work,
right?
Like yeah, it was a movie where you know one of them had to go to an office job and the other one had to do you know
then it would be the secretary
work in the library or whatever. Like that would be an entirely different thing, yeah. But like the entire focus is.
Yeah.
Like that terrible Mother movie. Ugh. That's just, you know, that's structured in that way.
Yeah.
So they never have to, like, leave the house. The whole point is they don't have to leave the house. They're just inside this.
Yeah.
In this relationship.
Yeah. So I guess that wraps up episode 4 of the Cultcast Media Club, our Patreon exclusive thingy-mabobber, unless anybody has anything else to say about moths, butterflies, screeches in the night. Peeing in mouths.
And to make it clear, like I was pleasantly surprised that it wasn't such a straightforward metamorphosis movie because I was gonna be like, God, Jesus Christ, you really have to like make it that.
Yeah, if it was that, then they definitely overplayed the butterfly imagery.
Yeah, yeah. So
Actually, and I read this just in a second of a review of it. What was said there was that the butterfly imagery was more serving the purpose of showing that they were the butterflies in the case. They were pinned into that glass.
Yeah.
Case.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. That's yeah. That
and
makes sense.
They were nothing more than that, and they couldn't change it.
And it was kind of an homage to Silence of the Lambs, I'm sure.
I don't think so.
Why not? Sure. Yeah. I'll go with it.
So,
thank you.
Thank you so much for your support. You make it possible for us to keep bringing you Cultcast Media Club episodes where we read, watch, listen, all kinds of stuff. Next month, we are going to watch Weird Science. So if you want to check those things out, please do so. So you can get in on the conversation, send us a message on Patreon, check us out on the social meteors. We really appreciate your support. We also appreciate you sharing the podcast and rating, reviewing us on iTunes or whatever player you happen to listen to.
And you know, since this does go out directly to the people who are paying to help us out, so that means that they believe in what we're doing here.
Yes.
You know, say something to your friends. Recommend our podcast to your pals. Yeah. Go on your you know, Facebook polyamory groups.
So
and,
let's get real and kind of intimate on the mic with our Patreon supporters right now. You know, and I do see them sharing things on social media, and they give us a lot of personal feedback, and we appreciate every single bit of it. You know, there's nothing better than hearing that, like Tuesdays when we release our podcast, our favorite days of the people that love the podcast. We are really surprised that anybody listens to the podcast.
And yeah, it's wonderful to be someone's highlight of the
week.
It's
awesome.
Personally, I don't get it.
Yeah, we don't understand, but you like us, so
hey,
thanks.
Keep on, that's cool.
I understand it because I think the podcast is great.
I think the podcast is awesome. I think it's awesome for me. So, so thank you to my co-hosts, Max, Hannah, and Eric. And I'm Chasten. Thank you for, you know, helping to make this podcast great and making it something that people are falling in love with. I'm really proud of us. Keep listening. And yeah.
Bye.
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 You've been listening to the Pod Cultcast with your hosts, Max, Hannah, Chasten, and Eric. Our theme music is by Lobo Loco. Our break music is Pale Blue by Gabarino. You can find episode show notes, social media, and contact information at podpodcultcast.com. Remember, that's cult with a V. Our podcast is brought to you by our supporters on Patreon. Visit podpodcultcast.com/supportthepod to subscribe to our Patreon now and become a supporter, become a shipmate. Thanks for listening.